The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
The more the world changes, the more we find comfort in the things that never change. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Rabbi Daniel Lappin Show, and thank you, all you loyal listeners and happy warriors, being part of the show and helping to promote the show to other folks. My deepest appreciation to all of you. And today we're going to do something a little bit different. And, you know, we always like trying to shake it up, make sure that we are able to please the greatest number of people and provide authentic value to as many people as we possibly can. And so what we just did was a few days ago, we let everybody know, both by Twitter at Daniel Lappin and Facebook, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and also through a mailing of Thought Tools, we let everybody know that at a certain point, as a matter of fact, it was this last Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, we'd be having a conference call at which I would take questions. And the questions I wanted to take were primarily on the relationship between money and marriage, but essentially it was open to questions on any of the four F's: family, faith, finance, and friendship. And sure enough, we had about 100 folks on the call, and I think there was time during the course of the show, I think I took about four or five or six calls, something like that. At any rate, what I have done then is now made that the contents of that conference call available on this show. So the rest of the show is actually going to be the conversations that I had with folks who called in. So you'll let me know how you like that, and take a listen. There'll be several segments, each one or two calls, and then I'll be back with you at the end. Meanwhile, the website, as you know, is rabbidaniellappin.com, which is a fine place to let us know your reaction. Is this the kind of thing you enjoy? Do enough of you want to participate in a conference call that we should do it again? You can let me know all of that easily on the website, rabbidaniellappin.com, and also a place where you will take a look at some of the resources that we have available, both in the area of money and in the area of marriage. The marriage one is called Madam, I'm Adam, Decoding the Secrets of Eden, because indeed it is the first few chapters of Genesis that lay out a biblical blueprint on male-female relationships. But anyway, we cover just a little bit of that this time in the show, but there's a whole lot more, and I'm hoping for more opportunities to be able to impart all of that. So on with the show. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll continue right now.
Ancient solutions to modern problems. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and Retirement Curveball is a book by a finance expert that I respect, Dr. Tom McPhee. Whether you are thinking about retirement, are already retired, or have never given the big R even a thought, now is the time to welcome the contents of this book into your mind. The book is filled with compelling aha moments and will motivate you to make some highly effective changes in how you manage your money and your life. I know Dr. Tom McPhee and his terrific book, Retirement Curveball, and I do recommend it. Get the book at retirementcurveball.com or on Amazon.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin returns with more of How the World Really Works on the Blaze Radio Network, on demand.
Well, hello, everybody. A very good evening to you, and thank you so much for being part of this conference call. And what I think I'm going to do is just walk us into the topic a little bit. It's
actually on the four F's that I like dealing with: family, faith, friendship, and finance. Those are the four. However, I am particularly focused on this particular show this evening. I'm particularly focused on money and marriage, or the way I sometimes put it, it's a little bit more direct and perhaps not as refined, but it does go to the point, and I'm going to speak about that. But I sometimes speak of it as sex and money, the linkage between these two areas. Now, one of the questions, obviously, is whether the linkage we can all see with our own eyes between money and sex, whether that linkage is real, intrinsic, a natural condition for all human beings, or whether alternatively it is sort of culturally imposed. And the way to explore that is to see the extent to which there are exceptions, if any, and how many of these exceptions there really are. So what am I speaking about? Well, one of them is that women are attracted to men who have a few dollars. One of the ways we know this is that there have been some interesting polls taken on the extent to which your potential mate's credit rating impacts you. And sure enough, about twice as many women, over 80% of women, honestly say, yeah, you know what, if the guy's got really bad credit, I'm just not that interested in dating him. A far smaller figure, around about 30%, or sometimes some studies show less, of men say, "Oh, yeah, you know, if she's got bad credit, I don't want to date her." The majority of men are less interested in that. Another area, and by the way, let me just clarify: as the father of six daughters, in no way do I look down on women who measure the financial health of the guy they're thinking of dating or courting or seeing. I see nothing wrong with that. I think the term gold digger is ludicrous and absurd and has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the topic that under discussion. It is entirely appropriate. And I'm going to explain that the financial condition of a man tells far more about the man than the financial condition of a woman tells you about the woman. Furthermore, we know that men are actually more drawn to women who are not high-earning women. Okay, that's interesting. But sure enough, an interesting study, I've seen it done several times, where they show one test group of guys pictures of women with their names and with their occupations underneath, and they ask the guys to rate their attractiveness. And, you know, the occupation is just written in small letters beneath the name, and the guys in general tend to favor the low-earning occupations. So in other words, subconsciously, they're noticing whether the woman's occupation is lawyer, investment banker, doctor, et cetera, or on the other hand, you know, nursery school teacher or nurse or whatever it is. And yeah, guys tend to, now what they then do is they reverse all the occupations. In other words, all the women that had been, all the women's pictures that had high-earning occupations are now replaced with low-earning occupations and vice versa. And then again, they're shown to guys, and sure enough, the guys' preferences switch. And I shouldn't laugh because I'm a guy as well, and I've no doubt that that's exactly what I would do as well. What's it all about? It's very, very simple, and that is that a man's identity, and if I can say his sexual identity, is very linked to his ability to bring the bison back to the cave, very linked to his ability to produce in the world. And this is one of the reasons that, and unfortunately, I mean, it's a very sad thing, but in places around the United States over the last 40 years, there have been enough instances of entire areas that have lost their industry. There was a really bad time for the Pittsburgh area when steel just vanished, and Pittsburgh's enjoyed a resurgence now. There were industrial facilities of the Northeast. There was a period they floundered very badly. And in each one of these cases, we've been able to notice the linkage between male sexual dysfunction and job loss. We find almost no female sexual dysfunction associated with job loss. So in other words, one of the things we know is that a man's self-identity is very linked to his money-making ability, and with women, that's a lot less true. Now, you can see why this kind of conversation is uncomfortable for the culture in the current climate, because part of the current climate's emphasis is that males and females are identical and exactly the same. And so what comes out of the worlds of academia and politics is this notion that men and women are the same. Hence, you find that school districts are encouraged to allow people to use whichever bathroom they want. In other words, all of this male-female difference, it's nothing but culturally imposed. Well, it turns out this is absolutely not the case at all. And in the linkage between money and marriage or money and sex, we find it compelling to be compellingly true. And so what I'd like to do is begin to go into some specific questions that you might have. And if you don't have any questions, that's also fine, because I have questions that people have written in, extremely intriguing questions and questions that you will probably find as interesting as I will. So what we'll do is we will go to the question and answer section, and that means that in just a moment, when I finish talking, you can press *6 on your phones, and that is the equivalent of raising your hand. That tells me that you have a question to ask. And what I'll do is I'll then unmute each of you, whoever I'm talking to, one at a time, so as that you can answer your question. And if you don't mind, the way I'll identify you is by the last four digits of your number. Now, those of you who are on the call by VoIP, those of you who used who are on your computers, your names actually show up. So that makes it nice and easy. But for everyone else, I'll identify you by the four digits. So remember, *6 puts up your hand and tells me you have a question to ask.
Spilling ancient solutions to modern problems in areas of family, faith, friendship, and finance. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Pat Gray.
The LGBTQIA+, it is going to be more than a 3-hour process to get through every letter who now belongs to this group.
The closing music of hour 3 will be playing while you squeeze in the last
ridiculous
of the letters.
Z! And don't forget Q! No, we did Q already, but there's another Q!
And we're clear. Sorry, Pat.
Right,
didn't get them in. You can try to get them all in tomorrow.
Get them in.
Pat Gray. Weekdays noon to 3 Eastern. Only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Revealing how the world really works. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin. On demand. On the Blaze Radio Network.
Okay, so you get the idea, and you see how all of that works. And so, any time that you'd like to intersperse with a question, well, that's the whole purpose. That's exactly what it is we're trying to do and cover this evening. So that would be just fine. Meanwhile, What we'll do, well, okay, let's go to Jim, you know, in Orlando, Florida, but I don't have that sort of information in front of me here, but I am going to somebody whose last four digits of their phone number is 0234. Okay. And,
hello, can you hear me?
I sure can, yes.
And as with tradition, first caller is Andrew from Rockford, Illinois. How are you today?
Couldn't be better. Thank you, Andrew from Rockford, Illinois. Nice to hear from you. What's up?
Can I ask a finance / friendship question?
Yes, of course.
This might apply to sales more than friendship, but I think they apply to both. In your experience, how often should you contact a friend in order to keep the relationship warm, and what are some of your favorite ways of kind of stoking that fire of friendship with that contact?
Let me just pause for just a moment, Andrew, and I'll tell you why. Because, okay, I thought I had a technical problem here, but I think we're actually good. We're good. Do me a favor, if you wouldn't mind, Andrew, and just repeat your question one more time to make sure everyone has it.
Certainly. In sales or in friendship, I don't feel like I have a good understanding of how often I should contact somebody just to keep that friendship warm. So in your experience, what's a good time frame that if you haven't talked to someone in so long, you will get in contact with them and try to rebuild that warmth in the relationship? And what are some of your favorite ways to stoke that fire?
Sure. So the first thing I have to tell you is that men and women communicate in entirely different ways. And that's hardly news, but let me give you an example. If Tom notices that Jerry's shirt has caught on fire, Tom will say, "Hey, Jerry, your shirt's burning." And Jerry will say, "Oh, thanks, Tom." End of conversation. I can guarantee you that Tom is not going to call Jerry that evening and say, "So, Jerry, what did it feel like to have your shirt burning?" Not going to do that. And the next day, Jerry's not going to call Tom and say, "Hey, Tom, you want to come shopping with me to replace my shirt?" None of those things are going to happen. But they would happen if women are involved. So to put it directly, I will sometimes hear the phone go, and I hear my wife picking up the phone, and she will talk to the person who called for maybe 15 minutes, and as far as I can tell, no substantive information was communicated. I didn't see my wife making any notes. I didn't see her pursing her lips or holding her chin. It was just a conversation she conducts with a smile on her face. And at the end of it, I say to her, "So what was that about?" And she says, "Oh, you know, there was my friend Shelley called." And I said, "Oh, what was that about?" She says, "Nothing." Now, for me, and the same would be true for you, if the phone goes and I answer the phone and somebody on the other end says, "Oh, Rabbi, hi, you know, this is Tom." At that point, my meter is ticking. And Tom has about 30 seconds max to tell me why he's calling, what I can do for him, what he wants, what he needs. And if he doesn't do that, I start getting very itchy. And for me, communication is about conveying information because I'm male. And obviously there's a bit of a spectrum there. I mean, there are, you know, some guys sort of tend to be more talkative than others. But basically, in as much as one can generalize, guys communicate in order to convey information. Therefore, to answer your question, you cannot look at the calendar and say, "Oh, I haven't spoken to Alan for 3 weeks. I better give him a call," because what are you going to say? You see the problem?
Mm.
You cannot just call up and say, "Hi, this is Andrew. I'm just calling to see how you're doing." Because the answer is, fine, thank you, I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you doing? Okay, good, now tell me why you called. And to say, I just called to stay in touch with you, well, it feels manipulative, it feels uncomfortable, it's a little weird and creepy. You can't do that. And so the only way to call is when you have real, genuine, authentic reason for calling. If you've heard that he took a fall on the skating rink, you can call to say, I heard you took a fall, are you okay? You can do that. Alternatively, you can also do, and this is the what I like doing, which is calling with some kind of gift. And so, you know, if it's somebody I want to retain a relationship, we haven't spoken for a while, by that time I usually kind of know what his interests are, if he's a collector of different things or if he would enjoy tickets to a sporting event. But whatever it is, I'll call up to say, listen, I've managed to get hold of some tickets I can't use, and I was thinking of you, wondering if you'd like to use them. And that works just great. And that in itself will give you a sense of the timing, Andrew. You see what I mean?
I do. And, of course, there's a lot of complications that go with sales relationships of different tricks and tools. I'm sure that's a whole other conversation there.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, let me just say, if anybody else would like to get onto the question queue, no problem. All you do is dial *6 and follow the directions, and then you will be next up as we move through the list of people who have specific questions. In general, on faith, family, friendships, and finance, specifically focused on money and marriage. Yeah. Well, Andrew, you got it?
I apologize. I was just going to ask you one quick little two-second question. Are there any books that come to mind that, as you see what my question was about, you would suggest?
No, offhand, I can't say offhand. If I did a bit of a search, there'd probably be some. I'll tell you, oddly enough, the one that I don't recommend it wholeheartedly, because there's an air of artificiality about it, and that is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I'm not an unreserved fan. I think if you read it cautiously without the sense of I must do everything he suggests, I think there is value. For instance, he speaks a lot about the importance of knowing people's names, using people's names, remembering people's names, and that's certainly true and valid and good. But the part that I find a little bit artificial is the sense that you're doing all this in order to influence people. And if you're in sales, as in one way or another, as most of us are, then there's very much a sense of, hey, am I doing this because I really like you and I really want to build my relationship with you, or am I doing this simply because I want to try and be in a better position to influence you? So that's my caution with that book.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to hearing the other questions.
You bet. Okay, terrific.
You're listening to Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Find more at theblaze.com/radio.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Everything now is abnormal. Nothing is predictable. The only institution in the country lately that is actually delivering anything predictable is the media. You can predict week after week, day after day. You can predict exactly what they're going to do, and that is forever be hypocrites and inconsistent.
The Glenn Beck Program.
With stories in the areas of family, friendship, faith, and finance. This is Rabbi Daniel Lapin, only on the Blaze Radio Network, on demand.
And what we do is we now say hello to... well, you're going to have to tell me exactly who you are as you join in, but your phone number ends with the digits 7569. So welcome. Who are you?
Thank you. This is Isaac from Ohio here.
Say again, what's the name?
Isaac from Ohio.
Wonderful. Isaac, thanks for joining us. How are you doing this evening?
Well, Rabbi, thank you. I appreciate that.
Good. Well, I'm pleased you're here and eager to hear your question.
I have a quick question on family. I remember from one of your shows that you have a 6 or 7 kids and you homeschooled them.
That is right. 6 daughters, 1 son, and indeed we homeschooled them, yes.
What kind of homeschooling programs do you recommend?
You know, for that, what I'm going to suggest you do is on our website, there is a section called Ask the Rabbi. And okay. I recommend you post that question there. The reason is because although I love saying we homeschooled, and although it was a partnership, as in most families, the bulk of that load, the bulk of that burden was carried by my wife, Susan.
Very well. Okay.
So she would be happy to tell you that. I know a different year, and we used the Sunlight curriculum. We loved that. There were many others in at different periods and for different children. We always found something that was suitable. We very strongly took the biblical dictum to heart, which is educate each child according to his style.
Okay.
And so for our son and for each of our daughters, we really tried to make sure we knew what their style was, and that helped us pick the right kind of curriculum.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You are certainly welcome. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
All righty. So, onwards with the questions, and we go to a caller whose digits are last 4 digits, 8187. Thank you very much for being with us. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
Jerry from Cincinnati.
Jerry from Cincinnati, is that right?
That's right.
Terrific. Thanks for being here, Jerry. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's a great honor to even talk to you.
It's my pleasure. I love communicating. I love having a chance to talk to folks. And when I do speeches for companies or for churches or synagogues, sometimes my favorite part is the opportunity to actually meet folks after the event and find out a little bit about their lives. But tell me what's in your mind.
Well, you know, I've studied you for quite a while now, and you say that everybody needs a rabbi. And
I know, and that sounds rather self-serving, but I do believe it anyways.
I believe it too. And I have, I own my own company, and it's great. It's very challenging. And I guess, how does a person get, like, a rabbi, you know, say as yourself, like involved, like in a more deeper level, like with, you know, business and, you know, like on a personal level, like actually maybe even come to the company, and how would I go about even, like, you know, like, say, getting you to come to my company and not you.
Sure. Look, I do that for companies. What is the product or service that you sell, Jerry?
I own an outdoor power equipment store. Like, you know, we sell lawnmowers and chainsaws and fix them and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, great. Great. I love chainsaws. And for a long time on the radio, I used to joke that I measure masculinity by how many internal combustion cylinders you own.
Yeah. I got a bunch.
You know, one on the chainsaw, one on the lawnmower, 2 on the outboard motor, 8 in one car, you know, that sort of thing. But so I know the field you're talking about. Okay, so my answer to your question is in two parts. Number one, the direct answer to your question is that on our website at rabbidaniellappin.com, there's a place to contact us. There's a place to write to us. And you would just go ahead and say exactly what you're interested in doing. And yes, I was in Nashville just 3 or 4 weeks ago working with a car company, a car distributorship. And so, yes, I do that. Go to the website and put in an inquiry, and somebody in our office will definitely get back to you, and we'll see if that is possible. If that is possible. Now, the second part of my answer to your question is that you may not. It's possible that you don't need me. It's possible that 80% of what I bring you or could bring you is available through our resources, books, audio, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that what you really need could also be provided to you by a very good business coach. Because if do you have a partner or are you a sole proprietor?
Sole proprietor. I'm the sole owner.
Okay. It's very tough. You are in a tough, tough place because being alone and carrying the responsibility alone in business is plain and simple hard. It just is. And it means you've got nobody to bounce things off. You've got nobody to use as a sounding board. You've got nobody to present a question to and perhaps two or three alternative solutions and have them discuss the solutions with you. And of course, those are certainly things I do, but they don't need to be me. You know, I'd love to be able to say I'm indispensable and I'm the only person who could help you, but you know that's not true, and I know that's not true. It's possible that for a large part of what you need, a very good business coach would do the trick. Now, I would love to be able to say, contact me on the website and I'll give you the names of three business coaches in the Cincinnati area whom I like.
Mm-hmm.
And although I'm hoping to be able to do that soon, to have coaches around the country that have got some training from me and who have their own independent knowledge and experience and that I could recommend to you, bottom line is I can't do that today. I wish I could. I can't. But that doesn't mean they're not available. They are out there. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be someone in the Cincinnati area. It can be anywhere today, and you can use Skype and phone and everything else. So I would certainly be in touch with me, and we can look into it. But at the same time, I would also recommend you explore this world of coaching. And then finally, here's something which a lot of people don't think of doing. I'm a big believer in it. I can assure you that in a big city like Cincinnati, there are thousands of really competent older guys who are retired, who are running, you know, who are working 2 days a week, guys who are executives of companies, guys who are entrepreneurs and owners of companies. These guys are there. And all you need to do is find one and build a relationship with him where he will derive great pleasure from being your mentor, and you will derive enormous tangible benefit from having him in your corner. That's the last idea. Have you ever thought of doing that?
I have two different people that kind of help me, but the problem is, you know, they're not spiritual, I guess.
It would be helpful to get somebody that you mesh with, not just economically and materially, but also spiritually. That would be helpful.
It's kind of hard for me to. I don't know, not that I don't think they're a good enough person. I just don't think they're you, but I don't think they're, you know, I don't know how to explain it. Like, they're just not, I don't know, they're not what I want.
Explore the wonderful world of coaches, business coaches, and also search in your spiritual community, put out the word that you'd like to meet somebody like that. Don't say I'd like to find, but I'd like to meet somebody like that.
Yeah.
Give that a shot. Yeah. Would you? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
All right. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Lovely to hear from you. And do stay in touch and go through the website, all right?
Will do. Thank you very much.
Terrific. Okay, great.
There's still more to come from Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Don't miss the Morning Blaze with Doc.
You have a date?
Yeah, your wife didn't tell you? I told your wife.
Wait a minute. Don't you want like a year?
No, Doc Thompson. And I will tell you why. We'll go to commercial.
Buyer's remorse? You're worried about that?
No, Doc Thompson.
I mean, on her part.
Yes, of course. I got to lock that in quick.
Okay, I'm going to give you that. That makes sense now that I think about that.
Yes.
The Morning Blaze. Weekday morning, 6 to 9 Eastern on the Blaze Radio Network.
We now return to Rabbi Daniel Lapin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
So here's what we want to do now. I'm going to go to another call in just a moment, and I'll tell you who's up next is the person whose phone number ends with 4353. So I'm going to come to them next. But before I do that, let me read to you one of the questions that absolutely fascinates me. And I'll see if I actually have time to respond to it tonight. But at least let me tell you the question. I think you'll be as intrigued with it as I am. It is a very common, real life problem. Okay. The guy says, I'm a married father of two great kids. I'm a regular listener to your weekly podcast, and I've purchased several of your audio programs that I return to time and time again. I'm writing because the constant discord between my wife and I has become too much, and we are reaching a breaking point. She maintains that everything, underlined, is my fault entirely, and is constantly barraging me with put-downs, insults, and belittling comments. In the last 5 minutes of your 11-17-2017, that's this last November the 17th podcast, the name of the podcast, the name of that episode, by the way, is Frightening Facts About Sex They Didn't Teach You in the Ninth Grade. And this guy writes, in the last few minutes, you raised the topic that spoke directly to me as if you were a first-hand observer in my relationship with my wife. Unfortunately, your description of the way women can so effectively use words like weapons, while the tendency of men is to withdraw and retreat in silence, well, that's exactly what happens between us. Additionally, because we work together, every error that I make in any aspect of my personal and professional life is additional cause for disgust and revulsion to my wife. Powerful words, but he's exactly right, because that's what happens, resulting in verbal attacks on what I perceive to be my very existence. What he means is his entire sexual identity is under attack. In that episode, you mentioned that we should let you know if this was a topic that you should discuss further. I did say so on and so forth. He says, I'm writing to ask you to revisit this topic to provide ancient Jewish wisdom on how I can try to deal with this. Please let me know where I should look for more direction of this discussion of this topic, or revisit an upcoming episode of your podcast. And that's the letter. Look, situations where husbands and wives work together in the same business, these situations are fraught with peril. And I will try and come back to that and talk about it a little bit, but I will just put in here now another reality about money and marriage, and that is, in the same way that it is pretty hard to find harmonious and stable marriages in which the woman proposed marriage to the man, very hard, so much so, by the way, that is that there are cruel videos up on the internet of women proposing to men, and the proposal goes horrible, as you would think it would, right? Because the overwhelming majority of guys don't respond well to that, and the overwhelming majority of women know that the way men and women are constructed is that the man has to ask the woman to marry him. It's the only way it works. There are many women, however, who get misled by cultural propaganda that they're exactly the same, and they see no reason. You know, why shouldn't they propose until they actually try it, and it blows up in their face, and it's mortifying and humiliating and horrible to watch. In exactly the same way, It is very difficult to find stable marriages where the woman dramatically out-earns the man. Now, an exception to that would be, it sometimes happens, a medical student in the last year of residency marries a nurse, and he's making pennies, and, you know, a nurse makes a decent living, she's out-earning him. That one can work because everybody involved knows that in 1 year's time, that medical student will now be a doctor and will be earning very, very well, and in fact, his wife, the nurse, probably won't even have to work anymore if she doesn't want to. But generally speaking, it's a huge problem. And that said, to be in business together with your wife is very problematic, partially for that reason, partially for others. Hope to come back to that. It's a big, big topic because many people, many entrepreneurs who start businesses do involve their wives, or their wives want to be involved. The wife says, hey, you know, I want to work. Why would I go and work for a stranger when I can come and work in our own family business? And one has to be careful. There are safeguards that have to be put in place in that sort of situation. But for now, and again, let me just remind you, if you want to join the question queue, all you got to do is dial *6, and that'll put you on the queue. But meanwhile, we're going to go to somebody whose phone number ends with 4353.
Hi, this is Shauna from Michigan.
Well, hello, Shauna from Michigan. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Couldn't be better, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, so you basically just touched on my question. It's this correlation between marriage and money. I was listening to a study on NPR recently, and it was talking about how many women in this country earn more money than their husbands do. It was talking about the data on young American couples, and the research found out that a man is more likely to cheat on his partner if he's more financially dependent on her, and men who are completely dependent on their girlfriends and wives are 5 times more likely to cheat than men who earn the same amount as their partners. So I just found that very interesting, what you were saying about culture and the feminist movement, how it has disrupted families, marriages, you know, obviously between husband and wife, where the husband feels quite emasculated. He's kind of lost his place in society, in the home. And really, men were, like, for many, many years, the breadwinners, and the women, you know, traditionally looked after the children. So now that the roles are confused, I was wondering what your thoughts about that.
Sure. So first of all, whenever I hear of a study on NPR, I'm always a little bit concerned because there is always so much political bias today, and it's true on every side. So I'm always cautious about anything that says studies show or experts insist or studies reveal. I'm always cautious about that sort of thing, and I would know that a left-leaning organization like National Public Radio would want to accelerate the trend of women earning substantially, and one of the ways to do that is to talk about its popularity. You know, I once gave a course, more than once actually, I gave a course for rabbis and also for pastors, leading synagogues and churches on fundraising and building a solid foundation, a solid economic foundation for the church or the synagogue. And one of the things I said is don't ever go before your synagogue and beg them to contribute. Don't ever say we're really in need of funds. We've got to fix the roof or buy an organ or whatever it is. Don't do that. All you do is get up and thank all of those many people who've been so incredibly generous, regardless of the fact that maybe nobody has. But
right. Or just let the roof leak in.
Sorry?
Or just let the roof leak in until someone...
Or that what?
let the roof leak in water until someone comes to pay for it?
Well, no, not at all. No, the point is that I want to make everybody feel that they are the exception in not everyone else around them is being very generous, and they are the exception, and nothing motivates people more than that kind of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. But if you beg people to give, well, then it's obvious that all the folks around me aren't giving, so why should I? But if what you hear is the leader thanking everybody for giving, you're saying, oh, I haven't given it. I must be like the only person in the whole place who hasn't given it. So, you know, that's... that's just part of what's going on. So I know that places like NPR tend to sort of say, look, you know, all these women are earning plenty of money. So I don't actually have at the tip of my fingers any reliable figures on whether or not the number of women out earning their husbands is growing or not. I don't know that, but I will look into it. But what I do know is that the follow-up, what you mentioned, is absolutely true, and that is that these marriages where the woman out earns the man are intrinsically unstable. And yes, there is more cheating, by the way, in both directions. You see, the most important thing that a woman has to feel towards her husband is respect and admiration. She has to be able to look up to her husband. A woman is, generally speaking, unhappy when she doesn't feel proud of her husband. And one of the interesting indicators of that I want to tell you about real quickly is that although it is true that on average men are taller than women in the United States of America, right? Obviously everybody mm-hmm. knows that. You know, you do have your short Michael J. Foxes and you have your very tall Serena Williams, the tennis player. But mm-hmm. generally speaking, it's not like that. Well, what is very interesting is that we have more statistics on these kinds of things in the United States of America than almost on anything else. And so it's really easy to do a mathematical calculation of what percentage of couples should be made up of a taller man and a shorter woman. Well, given the distribution of height among men and women in the country, the correct figure is about 65%. About 65% of couples should be made up of the man taller than the woman, and about 35% the woman the same height or taller than the guy. In reality, however, the reality doesn't match the statistical sampling. The reality is that the percentage of couples where the man is taller than the woman is over 90%. So what that means is there's nothing random about it at all. There are only two possibilities. Women seek out taller men, or men seek out shorter women, or thirdly, both. Mm-hmm. But there is no other conclusion to be drawn. And that makes perfect sense, because it's simply a physical metaphor for a spiritual reality. A woman wants to be able to look up to her man. Mm-hmm. And when that's not the case, she becomes sexually vulnerable to a man whom she does look up to and admire, and the man who, as you correctly put it, is feeling emasculated by the situation, very easily indeed succumbs to a bad situation. Happens all the time. Is that what you're talking about, Shauna?
Yes, you're right on. Thank you so much. That was very interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit rough, but it is the case. Yeah. Anyways, thank you very much indeed. Very good talking with you. I appreciate it.
All right.
More to come from Rabbi Daniel Lappin, revealing how the world really works, on demand on the Blaze Radio Network. Podcasts that speak to your values.
What benefit any Christian gets from the government saying, yeah, you two can get married, you now have a marriage license?
It's free.
You read anything in scriptures about marriage, I don't see well. And you join your friends and your family and God and you come together and you're one man and one woman and you're now connected for life, and the government says it's okay.
Available anytime.
The reason I did this question for you today to think is to make you get uncomfortable.
Check out Freedom's Disciple at theblaze.com/radio, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Google Play Music. Welcome back to the Blaze Radio Network, on demand with Rabbi Daniel Lapin.
What we are going to do is pop over to another part of the country. That was Sean in Michigan. We're now going to go to Chris in the state of Washington. Welcome, Chris. How are you doing? So nice to hear you.
Hello there.
How are you?
Doing fine out here in the great Pacific Northwest. I have a question that's kind of, don't know if it's going to fit in with what you've been talking about already or not, and it's a problem that I think a lot of people don't want to talk about, but I'm concerned about, you know, values and so forth and the way the culture is going and all that sort of thing. But my two sons attended a Christian college, which will remain nameless, and one of the things they reported back to me that shocked them was the amount of pornography everywhere. I mean, this is a Christian college. In almost every guy's room, every guy's dorm, he was all over the place. I've seen statistics that say that 68% of Christian men struggle with this issue, and it seems horrific to think of that. What do you think are the causes? Is there a solution? I'd like to hear your comments on that rather a difficult subject.
It's a hugely difficult subject, and unfortunately, I'm probably going to be hugely unsatisfying on the topic, because it warrants an entire show all on its own, where we do nothing but delve into that. But at least just a couple of points we should look at. The area in which it hews very closely to the topic of, if you like, sex and money, is that one of the things we know is that involuntarily celibate guys make no money. I mean, this connection is enormously powerful. And so guys who, for whatever reason, are simply incapable of attracting a woman and becoming part of a couple tend to do very badly financially. They just do. We are all subject to the quick fix. When I was taking a one-month writing sabbatical in Jerusalem 2 years ago, I did a program for a venture capital company, and there were a number of people that there were a lot of people came to hear presentations from a number of Israeli high-tech companies. Well, the one that aroused most interest was a company that promised a machine that would cause you to lose weight. Now, years and years ago on, you know, late night television infomercials, you might remember there was the one that you strap around your waist, and it was electrical stimulation of the muscles. And this felt enormously satisfying. The idea was that you put no effort into it. All you had to do was sit in an armchair reading a book or watching television, and meanwhile this electronic device would send myo-impulses through your skin. And sure enough, you could feel your muscles expanding and contracting. And it really felt as if you were getting this workout, except you were strangely untired at the end of it. And strangely enough, there was no muscular pain. Well, as I think it was the late Vic Tunney, wasn't it, who said, no pain, no gain. And neither say did nothing. Well, there was another company that promised something similar using different technology. I whispered to my companion, don't even dream about putting a penny into that. It won't work. It's just not how the world really works. I don't care what their onboard doctors say. I don't care what their board of directors claim. It's not real. You can lose weight by eating less and exercising more. There is no painless way of doing that. And so we seek out easy alternatives. You know, I'm pretty sure we were the country that invented instant coffee. Nowadays, of course, nobody uses it because everybody goes to a coffee shop whose name will not be mentioned because they are not sponsors of ours. But Look, that's what pornography is. Developing and maintaining a relationship with a woman for a man is very, very hard. It's not simple. To be the right guy for a woman is not, you know, it's just not as easy as watching pornography and masturbating. I mean, I'm sorry to, I don't mean to be vulgar, but I'm impelled to be very direct and truthful about this. So it's way beyond the instant coffee of male-female relationships, because you know, most of us can easily manage without coffee for lengthy periods of time, but enforced celibacy is incredibly difficult and incredibly threatening, as I've spoken about earlier this evening, threatening to the identity of the male. That coupled with today's shockingly easy availability, I've seen figures, I don't know that I can vouch for them, but I've seen figures, as I'm sure everyone has, that more money is spent on the internet in the pornographic area than in anything else. And I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't shock me if it were true. It certainly wouldn't shock me if the figures are incredibly high, because it's something that that men need desperately. The authentic, healthy way of doing it is by having a relationship with a woman. But that is not easy. It is easier to take this route because of the availability and also the cultural acceptability today. Immediately in the post-war years, you know, between the end of World War II and the period I time as the beginning of the decline in America, say, you know, 1962, shall we say, in that period, for a man to be 28 and unmarried, there was a stigma attached, an entirely appropriate stigma. People are saying, like, what's the matter with you? Like, what sort of guy are you? It was absolutely out of the question for any of the major companies of the day. I know IBM specifically for sure, because I've actually seen some of the handbooks from the period. IBM never would hire a single senior executive. Not going to happen. What's more, not only did they insist that their senior hires were married, they actually interviewed the wives as well. So that's about as far as I can go on the topic. Of course, it's a big problem. Is it, you know, is that figure you cited of 68%? Again, I doubt it. It sort of sounds too high, but to be honest, I don't have anything firm to go on. It just based on the people I know in the Christian communities I know. And I know, I was just talking to a friend this morning, I was saying, you know, the Christians I get to know and the churches I know, you know, in a sense are self-selecting, and they really are the best of the best. They're just extraordinarily noble and powerful men and women. So it sort of seems high to me, but that's just my sense. But I'm not sure. In terms of telling you what the solution is, I wouldn't dream of trying to do that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I just wonder what the consequences are going to be if people's relationships are damaged, and of course that affects marriage and everything else. Then certainly,
yeah, of course, it makes it hard. There's no question about it that pornography makes it more difficult for these guys to maintain relationships.
And then, of course, earning potential and everything else within the society, it seems as if it would be affected.
And yes.
I'm not sure if that's something we can observe at this point or something that we would expect to see soon, because at this point, I don't seem, you know, the economy is doing great. Things are, you know, picking up. And so I'm not really seeing any kind of demonstrable problem that could be attributed to anything, regardless of what the cause might be. Because, again, financially and morally, our country's going down the toilet. And yet, financially, things seem to be getting better. I mean, President Trump's made some, regardless of what you think of the man, he's made some pretty good decisions when it comes to the business side of it.
You know, as you know, I supported him from March 2016, early in the Republican primaries. I felt that he was the only possible hope among office. So, you know, you don't need any caveat with me. But
That was for all the other listeners out there, you see.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I, you know, I'm sort of fairly direct about where I stand on these things. But again, I don't want to. I'm not going to go into it now, but I will say that I don't think the economy is in such fabulous shape. I mean, that it's improved and that the president has done some extremely helpful things, there's absolutely no question about. But there are still far too higher proportions in the population who are takers, not makers.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And sometimes for some of the reasons we've just been discussing, most times for other reasons as well. But obviously the piper does have to be paid on that eventually.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you very much. Enjoy your thought tools every week. Keep up the good work.
And thank you for joining us this evening. And thanks to everybody for joining us.
This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin on demand on the Blaze Radio Network.
Bill O'Reilly on the Glenn Beck Program.
The Justice Department finally going to put out its report, only it's not going to put out its full report. Just the Hillary Clinton stuff, not the Russian collusion stuff. I'm going, wait a minute. We all know the FBI, the fix was in. Okay, that's what it's going to say. It's not going to say it that harshly, but it's going to say that Comey and McCabe, the two top-ranking FBI officials, went light on Hillary Clinton. It's insane.
Bill O'Reilly on the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome back to Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.
And that means there is time for one more question, but I actually don't have anybody in the question queue right now, as far as I can tell. So if there is anybody, star 6 is what will bring you right onto that. And phone number ending 5618. Is up next. Good evening. Thanks for being with us. And who are you?
Hi, I'm Mark, calling from Wisconsin. I know
Mark from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Thank you very much for being with us this evening, Mark.
I watch your show every day.
And, oh, you talk when you say watch. I presume you mean the TV show on TCT?
TCT, yes.
Great. Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yes. And I get your emails to your thought tools and such.
Fabulous.
And
thank
I just want to say
me.
When my son was in college, he said there wasn't too much of a collection of marriageable women because the girls were all taking modern lifestyle, moving in and learning to live together in the college campuses.
And they were moving in with guys. Is that what you're saying?
No, moving in with other girls. And that's in a state college.
And they're, when you say moving in with other girls, in terms of... In terms
together.
Of lesbian relationships.
Yes, they're testing.
Yeah. Look, I must tell you, I really understand that. And there is a term that is bandied around in people who follow this part of the culture. And that is women like that, they call lugs, L-U-G-S, lugs.
Oh.
Lesbians until graduation. And you know why I understand them? Because
no.
Guys on the college campuses are so awful, and their understanding of sexual relationships and their understanding of women is so barbaric and primitive that I kind of totally understand a girl saying, you know what, I just don't want to have anything to do with them.
Well, from what we've heard on the news about college campuses in recent years, I can understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and also as far as elections... I was a voted Democrat straight for 40 years, but last two elections I turned around straight Republican because the Democrats are going totally socialist in their ideas.
Oh, yeah.
And everything.
Yeah. No, progressive is just another word for communist.
Yes.
But, no, it really is. But anyways, I take my hat off to you for that because it's extremely difficult, particularly if you're not, you know, if you're not 18 years old. It's very difficult as a mature adult to sort of change on something and to say, you know what, maybe I was wrong. In this case, I don't think you have to say you were wrong because I don't think, in the words of many, many people, not me, who say, I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party left me, and that's probably true for you too.
Yeah, basically that's what it is because I started in the 70s when there were a lot of good things coming, and then all of a sudden they became more...
Anyway, let's dump the politics and let's go to a question you might have.
Oh, I don't have a question right off. I was just making two comments that I had on my mind.
Oh, wonderful. No problem.
Okay, well, I'll leave you to the next caller then. Have a good time.
Wonderful, Mark from Wisconsin. I appreciate you being on the call, and thank you for your comments.
Thank you for taking me.
You bet. No, it's wonderful for me to have the chance to connect with folks. You know, the podcast, we do the podcast every week, but one of the things that's been bothering me about it is that it's just me talking for an hour and not having any kind of interaction. Now, I can do that. It's just not as much fun as it is actually connecting with other human beings, like I'm going to do now with Bruce, calling from I don't know where. Where are you from, Bruce?
Rabbi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Where are you calling from?
Arkansas, Southwest Arkansas.
Arkansas. Fantastic. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Oh, thank you, Rabbi. We go back a ways. I remember you from the W4CY show.
That's right. Yes.
Rabbi, as of late, I've been trying to study more in Torah, and I'm interested in a good synopsis, a good breakdown of Torah alone.
Bruce, like do me a favor. Would you write that question into the Ask the Rabbi section of our website?
Sure.
Please do that, because that kind of question I'd rather spend a little more time on in research and giving you an answer. I don't want to really do that on this particular venue.
Okay, I understand. Thank you for taking my call.
But yes, there are resources, and I'll be happy to get a better sense of what you need and what you're looking for and give you some ideas.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Okay, wonderful. Bruce from Arkansas, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate that. And we've just got time, I think, to say hello to you with phone number 1862 is your last four digits, 1862. Good evening.
Yes. Hi, Rabbi. My name's Kate, and I'm calling from Washington State.
Hello, Kate. Great hearing from you, and you know I love Washington State.
I do know that, yeah. Mercer Island, if I remember correctly.
You're exactly right.
Yes, yes. So my question for you actually is regarding what happens when you have a situation where a Christian woman is single and single into 50s or 60s or so, and just the right man just never seemed to come along, but she continues in her education and then continues to make pretty good money. And I was kind of listening to what you said earlier about the more a woman makes, the more unlikely she's going to be attractive to a man.
Yes.
And I just wanted to see your comment onto that.
Look, that is a reality. And another reality is that that a guy who's 60 can and very frequently does date a woman who's 40 or 45.
Okay.
That is again a reality, and so that means that for women in their mid-50s and upwards, the pickings can be somewhat slim, and it can be hard. However, there are also advantages that come with that age bracket, and that has to do with the fact that a lot of the proving is behind. The needs are less urgent and less compelling, and the status issues, many of those things have already been settled. And so let me just ask you this. Are you a person of faith at all?
Yes, yes. I'm a Christian, and I really had hoped that God would give me a husband. It just never seemed to happen.
Well, he can only give you a husband once you've found a man, and then he'll help convert the man into a husband.
That's a good point, and it's a little difficult. Yeah, good point.
It is, but first of all, I do think that if you are involved in a good church, and by good church I mean a successful church, a church with a strong and dedicated and visionary pastor, as well, you know, and a church of a significant size, your opportunities of meeting people are real, and you should use the church very, very much for that purpose. You should also not be shy about letting people know. that you would be grateful to them for introducing you. And I strongly encourage people to throw very modest, I'm not talking about things that have to, that require enormous culinary skills or anything, but invite folks over for dinner to your place. And if you happen to know single people, then invite single people, because one of the best ways to meet somebody is over a dinner table. And there's just not enough of that. You know, people go to restaurants and so on, but in somebody's home, it's ever so much better. And the art of inviting, you know, a group of 6 or 8 or 10 people over to have a shared dinner, and to lead the conversation and to be a host and to select the people in a way that they'll match and fit together. It's one of the great pleasures of life is entertaining friends. And even if you're not a great cook, it doesn't matter, because people would be coming for they'll enjoy the company and they'll enjoy the connections and they'll enjoy the ambiance anyway. So that's something I think you should do to just expand your circles and to be seen as a very viable and vibrant and vivacious person who is socially connected. So just get out there, become more active, okay?
Okay. Well, thank you.
Please do that, and you know, set yourself a program. Like, you know, start next week and evaluate things in 6 weeks' time. Tell me how it goes.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much.
Great talking with you. And that, ladies and gentlemen, I wish it weren't the case, but I've really enjoyed having you all on the show. I've enjoyed talking to the folks who've called in. And I would love to hear from you. Again, my website's a really good place to do that. I'd love to hear if this is something you would like us to do more frequently. And if so, just let me know, because I can happily do it. But if it's not fitting your need, if it's not providing you with enough return for your investment of an hour of your time, you need to tell me that as well. Alternatively, there may be some specific things you'd like me to do a little bit differently. This is, at the moment, this is experimental phase still. But at any rate, I've enjoyed this evening. I appreciate you all very much for being here.
The Blaze on Demand.
The Blaze on Demand.
This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin. Rabbi Daniel Lappin returns with more of How the World Really Works on the Blaze Radio Network on demand.
Well, there it was, everybody, and I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed talking with you. As I've often said, one of the only disadvantages of this podcast format, which I've come to like very much, is the fact that on terrestrial radio, I had callers, and it was great to be able to have two-way radio rather than just one-way. So the conference call I've just played for you was our attempt to try and recapture some of that dynamic. And I think what we'll probably, if you like it to any extent, I think what we'll probably do is not make the whole show the conference call, but drop various conversations of the conference call into a regular show. I think that is more approximate to the way a regular radio show used to work when I did it on KSFO in San Francisco and KTTH in Seattle and KVI in Seattle. So we'll see how this goes, but it sure is nice to be able to have folks listening from all around the world at their own schedules, on their own time, and not be constrained by the limitations of scheduled terrestrial radio. So we're going to do our best to move towards some kind of combination of both that produces the best value to you. So thanks so much for being part of the show. The website, rabbidaniellappin.com. Take a look at Madam, I'm Adam. And also Prosperity Power, Connect for Success. You'll get the gist of it on the website. If you go to RabbiDanielLappin.com, you'll be able to read about both those resources and see what you think. Meanwhile, for today, all that is left is for me to wish you a wonderful week of good health and prosperity. I'm your rabbi, Rabbi Daniel Lappin. God bless.
Ancient solutions to modern problems. This is Rabbi Daniel Lappin, on demand, on the Blaze Radio Network.